Fall from Grace by Matt McBride.
'Twas on the eve of December 9, 1547, that I made my way through the darkened thoroughfares of London, to the Bull and Bear Tavern, near St. Sepulchre's Church, in Newgate. I was expected. A room had been reserved for my visit on the same night for the past 5 years. Snow lay thick in the narrow alley leading to the door of the tavern, and a hidden obstacle caused me to stumble. My curse was echoed by a muffled yelp, and I realized my hindrance was caused by a vagabond, huddled against the wall. His frosted garments rendered him almost invisible. My hand reached for my sword. The gutter snipe straightway begged for mercy, saying that he meant me no harm, and was merely seeking shelter from the snow. There was something in his voice that gave me pause. He sounded young, and spoke not like a ruffian, but rather as an educated youth. I was struck with both pity and curiosity as to his circumstances. I sheathed my sword and spoke to him kindly. "Accompany me into the tavern, boy, and I will furnish you with a hot meal, if you will relate how you came so low." Once seated in the warmth of the tavern, I could see that Oldwin, for that was his name, was in his early 20s. His clothes were ragged, and he appeared half-starved. The pot girl brought us tankards of ale, and bowls of mutton stew, and he began to eat greedily. I allowed him a few spoonfuls to satisfy his hunger, before I pressed him for his story. Oldwin drank deeply of his ale before beginning. And this is what he confessed to me. "Sire, it has been 10 years since I made a terrible mistake. I've told no one, and feared for my life each and every day. But now I know that King Henry is dead, I can at last tell my tale. I was but 13 years old, and had been apprenticed to one Gilbert, a carpenter by trade, for some months. It happened that Gilbert had won the task of maintaining the rail fencing on the tourney ground at Greenwich Palace. A grand tourney was arranged for the morning of January 24th of that year. So, on the evening before, I accompanied Gilbert to make sure all was in order. Alas, my master was something of a drunkard, and we stopped at several alehouses on the way. We eventually arrived at a late hour. A tent with cots had been erected for our use, and a brazier had been lit. It was a freezing night, and Gilbert promptly retired to his cot, with a bottle of brandy wine. He ordered me to check the fencing. I did so, and found a bottom rail snapped, clean through. When I reported this, my master flew into a frenzy. He said it must be repaired, for King Henry himself would be jousting on the morrow. There was no time to fashion a new rail. So I was told to run back to our workshop and fetch a roll of thick copper wire, with which to bind the broken pieces together. This took me some hours, and when I returned, Gilbert was snoring loudly, and was dead to the world. He could not be roused. So, I took the wire and fixed the rail as best I could, wrapping the wire around to join the broken ends. It was nearing dawn, by the time I was done, but then I found I could not break the wire from the remainder of the roll. I had not thought to bring cutting pliers. The best I could do was flatten the roll onto the ground and cover it with straw. All this time I had been eating my stew as I listened, and now I indicated that Oldwin should eat his own meal, while I reflected on what I'd been told. I well knew what had occurred on that portentous January morning, and could guess at what was coming. But, I wanted to hear it from his lips. After a few minutes, he continued the story. "We had to stay for the tournament," he said, "in case any repairs were needed. And all was going well, until the king's horse crashed to the ground. And then the day turned into a total disaster. Gilbert and I watched in horror, as Henry was carried away on a stretcher. We both thought he was dead, and I, painfully aware of the probable cause of the horse's fall, felt an icy prick of dread run down my spine. Sure enough, when the officials had gone, I ran over to the rail and saw that the roll of wire was lifted and bent where the hoof had struck. I was sure I had killed King Henry. "'Twould have been a blessing if he had died on that day," I growled. Knowing that I would be hung, drawn, and quartered, if arrested, I walked off the tourney ground, and kept on walking. I journeyed the length of England, and far into the land of the Scots. During my travels, I heard tales of Henry's evil doings, and knew that I had not killed him, but I still expected execution for my part in the mishap. I knew that Gilbert would have made sure that the blame fell fair and square on my shoulders. "So," I said, "when you heard that Henry was gone, you believed you would be safe again in London." "I believe that after 10 long years, and his passing, it must by now be forgotten," was his answer. I stood and drew my rapier, "but not by all," I said, then slashed the razor sharp tip across his throat. His eyes widened in shock, and he grasped his windpipe in a vain attempt to breathe. The landlord and the few other customers flew to my side and stared in horror at the dying man. The landlord was the first to find his voice. "Master Culpepper, sir, what have you done?" "Landlord, you know what the morrow brings." "Of course, sire. 6 years to the day of your brother Thomas's execution." I nodded. "And when I pay my respects at his grave at St. Sepulchre's, I can tell him that the scoundrel responsible for changing good King Henry into a murderous tyrant is dead. At long last, my brother is avenged."